Welcome to A Course in Miracles. All right, everybody. We're going to look at this difference between listening to the ego and listening to the Holy Spirit tonight. And, you know, of course, what could be more important than being able to access the truth versus more illusions? And illusions are so clever that they've made up an entire world, and they probably made you a lot of money along the way, and they made you some friends and some family, and you got all sorts of things to give credit to the ego and credit to the illusion that it actually seemed to build for you. So this is no small task we're talking about. But of course it's quintessential. You know, in order to go away from the darkness, we have to know what it means to step toward the light. The darkness goes by many names. Some of them look very light. So in order for us to follow and to awaken to the freedom, to peace, confidence, to joy, to love, to the ability to actually start sharing for real, and sharing things of value for real, we'd have to be able to get an idea of what this Holy Spirit is in A Course in Miracles. So that's what we're going to look at tonight. Of course, there's a ton of ways to do this, so we'll just have to, we'll do as much as we can. But I got some ideas for you. So, to start off, let's kind of put ourselves in this space of openness that we like to start our meetings with. You have to, it's sort of like learning a new language. You know, you have to realize that what you're about to do, you don't know, and it's not like what you're used to doing. And in learning a new language, the first thing you do is you go back to your old language. And you try to make sense of whatever it is you're trying to say with your old language. This is no different. It's a real switch. And if you've tried to speak a foreign language, when you go back to English and muddle through, you get my point. So let's think together now. Take these next couple of minutes. Get yourself comfortable and get personal about your experience in this spiritual journey and path that you have. Each one of you has been making absolute progress on a spiritual journey for sure. There have been holy instances and there have been gains that you know can be called holy instants, that are lighter than darker. You know that there have been times in your life on your spiritual path where you said, oh my God, I think this could work. Those moments are critical. So I want you to just take the next couple of minutes and try to answer this question with me. What is it like to listen to the Holy Spirit? I mean, this is what we've come here for tonight. And all of us have personal experiences with this. We're going to try to put it in the terms of the book so that we can all align. But for starters, let's just kind of get a clue from real world experiences. So, what's it like to hear the voice for God instead of the voice for the ego? Surely there's a difference, and you know it. It's time now for you to go away from the words of A Course in Miracles, go away from the training and the learning of the world, and go in and claim your progress tonight, please. claim this thing that you know. Maybe you don't get to rehearse it very often, but you know what I'm talking about. It's time for you to claim the peace that you own in your own path. What I'm talking about is that there is a sense or an awareness that you have, an experience you have, when you listen to the voice for truth versus listening to the voice of fear or of judgment or of guilt. Claim it. Claim your own experience. Tonight you will own it more. What's it like to hear the Holy Spirit in you? Is there anything that has to happen in your mind to allow you to hear the Holy Spirit? Is there a condition or a state of mind where you'd never hear the Holy Spirit? Is there a state or a condition when you think you would always hear the Holy Spirit? What would that be like? And finally, if you'd sort through all that you just experienced and just pick one aspect, just pick one word or a phrase or something to share with the group that you like, what's it like to hear the Holy Spirit? What's something about that experience you can tell us? I don't mean to put any pressure on you guys, but if you don't have some kind of a inkling at this point with the Course in Miracles about being driven toward what the book is offering, what are you doing? There must be a better book for you. So this stuff. Let's see what comes out. Luann, tell us something about what it's like to listen to the Holy Spirit, and you'll have to unmute yourself.
When I'm listening to the Holy Spirit, I feel at peace, and it's because I have been willing to release myself from thinking.
A release? Peace from a release. I like it. It's rhyming. Yes.
Yeah, I have to quit thinking I can answer myself.
Beautiful.
And stop trying.
Wow. That sounds like a miracle occurs when you quit trying to answer it yourself. I mean, that's a shift. Beautiful. Miley, we're working on what's it like to hear the Holy Spirit? What's the experience? So you have to just kind of weed through that while you listen to everybody else. Jacqueline, can you tell us something about what happens and what's it like when you listen to the Holy Spirit?
In order to hear the Holy Spirit, I've got to really let go of anything and everything that I guess I'm thinking about and it's weighing on me. In the past, when I felt guided, it was always a happy, uplifted message or feeling guiding me. It'd be like if Holy Spirit wanted me to... I guess if Holy Spirit protects us, I don't know, but it seems to me sometimes I've been guided to take a different route, even when I'm driving, and that's usually been a positive feeling. And then later I found out maybe there was something that happened on the other route. I've had that happen a couple times in my life. I am having a challenge with, I think it's like you said, that if you're learning a new language, you're using your own language to kind of relate to it. So all the other guidance that I have felt I've gotten has been for other beings where I have some kind of image of them, like Jesus Christ, you know, angels. So I don't have an image. The Holy Spirit seems like this airy kind of invisible. So I'm finding it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Challenge to, you know, I don't know. Somehow it seems like it's just harder for me to. I don't know.
Excellent. I'm really glad to hear that. that there's no image.
And I know the image is not, you know, those images I have of the others is not real either, probably, but somehow, I don't know, Holy Spirit, just like I said, it's almost an emptiness or invisibility or something, so.
It's extremely personal. Really glad there's not an image there. That's good news to me. Mark, can you tell us something about what it's like to allow the Holy Spirit in?
Sense of tranquility.
Mm. Yeah.
Very nice feeling.
Yeah.
Warm, floating.
Probably just the right thing in contrast to where the ego was going when you needed the Holy Spirit for probably a good reason when you called on the Holy Spirit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very welcome contrast. You know it. Tranquility. Donna, you there? Can you tell us something about choosing the Holy Spirit? You have to unmute yourself. You're still muted.
I got it. Yeah, I'm not appearing so much on the screen because I had zoomed too much in work today. But getting back to this, I think what shifted for me lately is I realized this whole idea that was just, I think Jacqueline was just talking about it, that my idea of God was transcendent and the Holy Spirit was a leftover feeling that it's outside of me. So now it's like to listen to the voice of the Holy Spirit is like I'm giving the Holy Spirit a home inside my heart.
Mm.
And all like a couple things maybe just from today that were worth mentioning in that way. I've been taking my walks in a different way, and I just kind of breathe through my heart and look at everything and just lightly hold the idea that everything I'm seeing is love. And it just softens everything, and it helps me drop back into the background, and then it's like the Holy Spirit's in the foreground.
Ooh, nice.
And it's very beautiful.
Nice.
And the other thing from today is I but it's also what I've been working on is that I have been noticing how much guilt and feelings of scarcity, you know, or thought beliefs of scarcity are in my mind, but particularly guilt. So today there was a business letter, something from that I had to take care of, and everything had gone wrong, and my ego, you know, wanted to write back a certain way. But when I kind of make a light, it's not like a rule, it's just like a light shift, and I say, okay, there's not going to be any guilt, you know, not from myself or not, you know, like nothing that would evoke guilt as far as I can tell, the best I can do, in another person that I write. So I just drop into my heart, and it's like my heart has a whole different viewpoint. And that's, for me, like listening to the Holy Spirit.
Well, that's beautiful. Like what you said about you're not gone. The Holy Spirit is in the foreground. You're still there, but the Holy Spirit now is up front.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And also, what you said reminds me of page 90. Look at page 90 real quick. In context of what Donna just described, she says she's, especially with this whole guilt thing that came up, guilt sneaks up. That is the coin of the ego. It spends it where it's needed to get its way. But you got to wash that out. And around this whole business letter, if you're going to go on in a loving, be the loving person that you plan on being and not fall into some kind of ego attack and defense, you just have to wash out the ego's influence and that whole guilt. And one of the ways to do it is on page 90 in those italics.
Mm. Oh.
And Donna, would you read that for us?
Yes. If I'm on the right 90, I see.
Page 90 in the front of the book.
In the front of the book, okay.
Yeah, chapter 5, last paragraph.
So it's under, am I in the chapter 5, but it's under the decision for God at the end of that?
Yes, it is. Yes, correct.
Okay. I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself But I can also decide otherwise. I want to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. I do not feel guilty because the Holy Spirit...
Say that again, great. Please. You got that guilty laugh.
I do not feel guilty.
Yay. That was for sure. Say it like you mean it.
I do not feel guilty.
That's it.
Because the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him.
That's your contract with the Holy Spirit right there.
I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me.
That's how he does it. That's how he expunges you from all the guilt. Is that part of your mind, which is the Holy Spirit, chooses for God for you in that instance? Yeah, good, good. Oh, I love it. Thank you. Ross, tell us something about thinking with the Holy Spirit, choosing the Holy Spirit.
Something Rupert Spira said really hit home was the Holy Spirit is the deepest truth and knowledge. And as you just said, it is in my mind. So that makes it easier for me to be like, oh, okay, I can go to that, rather than go to something outside myself.
Nice.
And so I've experienced, you know, the clearest thing is when I really, really mean it. Like, you know, I remember when I decided I absolutely needed a teacher and just was adamant that I wasn't able to do it on my own. You know, things weren't working, New Age, all this other stuff wasn't working. So I really asked, and bam, the teacher appeared because the student was ready. So that's kind of my experience with it. When you really mean it, you'll get an answer.
That's it. When you really mean it. When you really mean it. When you really ask. When you really stand down. When you really step back. He will lead the way. Yeah, that's good. Good, good, good. That's so comforting to know, too, isn't it? Two things you said are so important.
It is. It's always if you really mean it, you'll get.
And if you don't really mean it.
A home run answer. That's what you'll get.
Yes. Yes.
If you just sort of, maybe the Holy Spirit could help, you know, that's what you'll get, kind of a, maybe I'll give you an answer.
If you say, well, let me listen to the Holy Spirit and I'll compare with what I already think I should do, and then I'll switch whatever one's better, then that's what I'll do. You don't mean it. You're not
exactly.
Surrendering.
Exactly. That's the problem. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I love the way you put that. I'll compare it to what I already decided. Great.
Can either of you say more about this? Asking for the Holy Spirit and being in the place where you mean it.
Well, yes. I can tell you how I found my first teacher. It's a 5-minute story. I was studying New Age stuff with a counselor who was into auras and hypnosis and all. It just wasn't for me. And he handed me a book called Halfway Up the Mountain, Premature Claims to Enlightenment. And I read that book and I was like, hey, wait a minute. There's something called enlightenment. That's what I want. And so I started trying to do it on my own, you know, whatever, awaken the kundalini, blah, blah, blah. And I finally decided, you know, I can't do this. You know, I need some kind of teacher. And basically, I sat down on my living room floor just like, done. Like, I can't do this. I absolutely can't. I need, you know, like I said, there was no hesitation. I was going to find a teacher. And the very next day, I found Ajahn Shante. And when I went to his meeting, there were like 5 people there. And I was sitting like from me to, you know, across, just, I could reach out and touch him. And, you know, the things he said were like, okay, that's the guy. And somebody just accosted me as I was walking to the meeting and said, you're going to sign up for the silent retreat. this is going to change your life seeing this guy. And I was like, what? No. And it did.
Yeah.
I signed up for 2 silent retreats and went to both of them. And the next time I saw him, there were 300 people.
Yeah.
And I just randomly went to this meeting where there was 5 of us. So it was a home run.
So look at page 660 in the text, page 660 in the text.
And what is the text, the chapter and number?
It is going to be
31:6.
Chapter 31, section 6. And we're actually going to look at the end of section 5, but it's a long section, so go right to the end of section 5 or the beginning of section 6, and then go back up a paragraph. And this...
Oh, it's chapter 5?
It's chapter 31.
Oh, it's 31.
Chapter 31, section V, as in victory, or 5, Roman numeral.
Okay. Thank you.
And what this does, this is a passage I like to refer to answer Mark's question and Ross's miracle, I call it, because he went from being basically a successful egomaniac who says, I can do it, I have to do it, I need to do it, I can just try harder, to I can't do that, I'm the problem, I need a guide. That's a surrender. So, Mark, the one word answer to your question is surrender. We have to surrender the old way, like learning a foreign language. At some point, you've got to stop trying to think in English and actually start forming sentences in your head in the new language before they come out your mouth. That causes a beautiful circle in your mind if you've ever learned a foreign language. But saying what we're doing here is the ego always has an answer for you. The ego always has an idea of what you should try or what you should try again because you didn't try hard enough last time. Things like that. Ego's full of them. So check out top of the page, paragraph 17. And Luann, would you read that for us?
Yes, and I would like to say one thing. When I quit thinking, because I know I don't have the answer, I don't have to form a sentence. The sentence is just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
17. The world can teach no images of you unless you want to learn them.
And you're basically reading this to Ross, who has gone through this passage.
There will come a time when images have all gone by, and you will see you know not what you are. It is to this unsealed and open mind that truth returns, unhindered and unbound. Where concepts of the self have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is. When every concept has been raised to doubt and question and been recognized as made on no assumptions that would stand the light, then is the truth left free to enter in its sanctuary, clean and free of guilt. There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world, or on myself.
I got nothing. I got nothing, that paragraph says.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. Please continue.
Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself.
What you are, not who you are. It's in capital letters.
Yeah.
Clue, clue, clue. Another level of teaching that's waiting for you right there in that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ross. That was great. Judy, tell us something about what it's like to to think with the Holy Spirit instead of the unholy spirit.
Years ago, I was able to successfully use the ego satisfaction of busying myself out of all problems.
Haha.
And I that's what came to my mind when you said, is there a time when the Holy Spirit isn't there? And yet I was getting all kinds of, you know, ego feedback. This is working fine. Then in 1985, I started doing the course. Millions of years later, I now know when I'm feeling the Holy Spirit. I'm conscious of it, and it comes in the moments when I'm not busying myself out of my problems. Swimming, out in nature, just flat out meditation in an uncomfortable situation, just to get quiet. And what it does for me is actually as extreme as making me not fear death, because I feel that's what death is peace and quiet and love without ego bombarding me. So it was a great trip.
Yeah, without loss. The ego says there's loss in death, but the Holy Spirit says there's no loss in death. It's a huge miracle. Very good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Job.
That sounds very peaceful. I can feel it. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Isadora, what's it like for you to have the Holy Spirit take over?
Well, can I address one of your other questions first?
Sure.
You asked, is there ever a time when you can't hear the Holy Spirit? And I was glad that you asked that, because I've been talking about that in my other groups. And during the evacuation, I could not hear the Holy Spirit. You know, it was like I had too many of those fight or flight chemicals running. And even after I got home, I just couldn't calm down enough. So, you know, recently there was a time I couldn't hear the Holy Spirit. It was just, it was a chemical thing. It was a physiological thing.
It's good to mark those times, because it's a way to decode how the ego blocks the Holy Spirit.
Yes, I mean, if I can see where if I was more trained with being able to drop into the Holy Spirit, that I wouldn't have been so thrown off.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. And then I wanted to tell you about this morning. I started having transmission problems with my car in April, but I've been ignoring it largely, because I know we're talking big bucks here. So, but this morning,
great way to save money: ignore the problem.
Exactly. Yeah, I do that. Anyway, this morning my intuition was absolutely screaming at me to not let one more day go by
before yes.
the shop. So I took it in, and it turns out that the oil, I had no oil in my engine.
Oh.
And so I was in danger of having the engine seize up. You know, forget the whole transmission thing. Like the whole engine was going to hit the road. So anyway, it was just in the world of form today. You know, Holy Spirit was really with me. So
bad things don't have to happen. Bad things don't have to happen.
Right. Right.
Turn to page 302 in the workbook, everybody. And this is lesson 160 for Miley. So at the bottom of the page, it says 302. The top of the page, it says lesson 160. This is a big clue on how the Holy Spirit gets blocked blocked, stopped cold, a time when you cannot hear the Holy Spirit, a time when the Holy Spirit is not reachable, not available. When you've got the veil up. So, Isadora, read for us that first paragraph.
You know what, sweetie? I've got the CE edition.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, the workbook lessons are all the same in that edition.
Okay. All right. So, lesson 160, I am at home. Fear is the stranger here. Fear is the stranger to the ways of love. Identify with fear and you will be a stranger to yourself. And thus you are unknown to you. What is yourself remains an alien to the part of you which thinks that it is real, but different from yourself. Who could be sane in such a circumstance? Who but a madman could believe he is what he is not and judge against himself?
And when you're in fear, you're completely consumed by the body's well-being and losing something of value, or people around you losing something of value and them suffering so much, and then you have a survivor's guilt because you're going to be okay, but they're really going to be hurting, and you can't pretend everything's okay when they just lost their house. 700 houses were lost, right? This is all investing in fear, and you become a stranger to love. You become a stranger to yourself. And it's very uncomfortable. So yeah, good contrast. That is a great example of how when you indulge in those thoughts of loss, whether it's for you or for somebody else, you are drinking the poison of the world.
You know, it didn't feel like an indulgence, though. It felt like the only choice I had. You know?
Yeah, well...
So, I mean, I hear you, and I agree with you, but it didn't feel that way.
I know. Good. Well, you got the right book. Because when you do these lessons and you think back over that week, it would think, well, how would lesson 160 apply to what I was going through that week? Or are there any attack thoughts in my mind? Can I find attack thoughts around it? You know, the lessons will work you through and guide you to unearth the addiction surfacing and the choices that you actually made by your beliefs.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was an addictive process because I wasn't even willing to open the book.
Not a girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. Emily, tell us something about choosing the Holy Spirit.
Well, I recently can give an example of how the Holy Spirit impacted me this week, because I had tenants who weren't wanting to move, and I'm trying to sell a house, but they don't want to leave. And so my attack energies were coming up. I wanted to, like, run the tractor by their house constantly all day, 24 hours a day, make noise, get them really, you know, agitated. All this was coming up in me, and I told my sister about it, and I said, I'm feeling like I'm the one who's...
Hey, everybody take a note here. Whenever you're going in a negotiating situation and you start thinking about using the tractor, it's probably not the right approach. Please continue.
And the rototiller.
And the rototiller. Right. Yeah. Everybody take a note, you know, if the tractor comes in. Yeah, go ahead.
So my sister says, Emily, that's not you. And I had to think about what she meant. And I went home and... then I started to call upon the Holy Spirit, and within 24 hours...
I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you again, because you're saying some really critical stuff. Everybody also, no joke, when one of your friends or family or somebody who loves you says, that's not you, an angel has spoken. You need to step back and listen. Please continue.
Instantly, I started to feel relief from all the pressure that I was creating. And then I started to find ways to bless them and
wow,
call on blessings for them. And I started to can up the fruit in our orchard, and I told them, I'm going to be giving, would you like some? And I have it all canned up, and just things of a nature that was completely, 180 from where I was, 24 hours prior. And I don't know if they're going to leave, but my generosity of heart changed me. And now I feel like I'm completely at peace with whatever happens. And it's not up to me because I didn't do anything. I'm not responsible for how this is all going to go. And I'm leaving it up to the Holy Spirit. And I'm going to be fine because I'm not responsible.
Yeah. You're responsible for Emily today.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows about the house? Who knows about your bank account? Who knows about those renters? Who knows about that? But you are responsible for how Emily behaves today. Because something you do today, calling on your Holy Spirit today, will go with you forever. And I guarantee you, none of your acts of anger or fear or attack, none of these things you get to keep. No, none of the benefits or nothing comes from them. But acts of love, the idea of actually doing the opposite of what the ego would do, and you shared something with them. Yeah, how different is that? Turn to page 142 in the text. Page 142. It's chapter 8, again, section 5, or V. Page 142 in the text. And
in my book, it's section 3.
Oh, it would be section 3. You're right. Thank you. Yes, it is section 3, the Holy Encounter. Section 3! Paragraph 4, there's more
to read. Andrew, you got to give me a page.
Page 142.
Yeah, it says the journey back on mine.
Correct, the journey back. Yeah,
okay.
Very good. Yeah, the journey back is the chapter, and then the section is called The Holy Encounter. If you were to go back,
I've got it. Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Walker. It helps Miley get in the right spot. We all have to get on the right page. So there's so much here. One day we'll come back here and spend the whole night, but for now, I just want to look at paragraph 4. And so, let's have Jacqueline, will you read paragraph 4 to Emily?
Oh.
Did you find it, Miley?
I did. I have the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Underlined.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
Yeah, that's why I went, oh.
And now Jacqueline will read this to Emily.
When you meet anyone, remember it is a holy encounter. As you see him, you will see yourself. As you treat him, you will treat yourself. As you think of him, you will think of yourself. Never forget this, for in him you will find yourself or lose yourself. Whenever two sons of God meet, they are given another chance at salvation. Do not leave anyone without giving salvation to him and receiving it yourself. For I am always there with you in remembrance of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you, Emily, for sharing that. Yeah. Julie, tell us something about choosing the Holy Spirit. What happened? What's that like?
I have to say, people are blowing me away tonight. So thank you to everyone.
Yeah.
Wow. I actually have nothing to top that. Not that I need to top that, but I just don't even, I'm just sitting here with a peaceful heart listening.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Julie. And if something pops in your head, you can take back over. Jason, tell us what it's like. choose the Holy Spirit, what happens?
What I have is it's a disassociated awareness from the body. It's one of peace and trust and trusting without expectation of any needs or wants.
Wow. Giving up the expectation of what you needed or wanted before. That would take a miracle for most people when they really need an answer. They need to get out of this problem. But to be able to take this particular surrender you're talking about indeed is open-mindedness. Thank you. It's beautiful. Yeah, boy, it feels different. Man, is that a shift in perception, a shift in life. Tim, tell us something about what's it like for you. What's it feel like in your brain when you choose the Holy Spirit?
When I turn to the Holy Spirit more and more often for help with decision-making, just on an hourly basis or even by minute, and I pay attention to it and I carry out the instruction that feels like it's coming from the Holy Spirit, I notice that my sense of guilt begins to go away, because by following the Holy Spirit's instruction, I'm no longer responsible for making poor decisions using the ego. And so I just feel less and less guilt because I've allowed the Holy Spirit to help me with these decisions on an increasingly frequent basis. And so there's healing that goes with consulting the Holy Spirit on a, you know, on a regular basis, checking in over and over during the day, being mindful of it. How many times, it's like a game, how many times a day can I remember to check in and be mindful of the fact that the Holy Spirit is with me at all times and is the decision maker? And then I feel better. I feel healthy. My sense of guilt goes away. If I die today, it's with the sense of I've done my best.
Yeah.
And so there's peace. There's a deep peace that goes along with letting the Holy Spirit be the decision maker every day.
He said a really key word in the middle of that, and he said a healing. You feel a healing is occurring when you go to the Holy Spirit and you use that part of your mind. So important, so essential. It's part of another one of the metaphysical vectors of A Course in Miracles is that this is a healing back to healthy, loving mind, to right-mindedness. Absolutely. Turn to page 28 in the front of the book. 28. And that is Chapter 2, Section V, unless Luann says otherwise. 28, Chapter 2, Section 5, and we just want to go to our toolbox item at the end of that section in those italics. It's so important you get this healing thing in your mind as yes, we can apply the teachings of A Course in Miracles to healing your body. Yes, sure. That's not the big work. That's not the real healing. That's not the healing that lasts, the healing that Tim is talking about. There is a healing that does have to occur. You are sick as you invest in fear and guilt as a way to find happiness or defensiveness or worry. Oh, my goodness. That's really sick. Those are the kind of sickness that you'll suffer for more than one lifetime. So, yeah, let's work on that.
Isn't, when you say sick, aren't you talking about all the times that the book says, that's insanity, that's insanity, that's
insanity? Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Sickness is insanity, same. Very good, Luann. Excellent. And, Ross, would you read to Tim paragraph 18.
You can do much on behalf of your own healing and that of others if, in a situation calling for help, you think of it this way. I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent Him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do, because He who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever He wishes, knowing He goes there with me. I will be healed as I let Him teach me to heal.
Do you see the circle right there? I will be healed as I let Him teach me to heal. It's very active. You don't get healed from the outside. Somebody doesn't come and fix you. That's the world where you need some magic. Some magic in the world can heal you. Like, you know, different types of food or drugs. That's not the healing we're talking about. This is really personal and permanent. And you take it with you as a leverage wherever you go. Let's do just a little more on this because it's such an important vector and it's inclusive what we're trying to talk about. Turn to page 114. This is chapter 7. Chapter 7, section 2, the law of the kingdom. The law of the kingdom. I love the strong words in this book. You know, it's not this soft pastel discussion. This is radical stuff. Well, we got to heal a really radical sickness. We need it. We totally need it. So, Judy, are you there? Can you start reading for us? We're going to read paragraphs 1 and 2. Read paragraph 1 for us if you're up for it.
Okay. 4, you said?
Yes, so paragraph 1. On page 1.
Paragraph 1. Okay. To heal is the only kind of thinking in this world that resembles the thought of God, and because of the elements they share, can transfer easily to it. When a brother perceives himself as sick, he's perceiving himself as not whole, and therefore in need. If you too see him this way, you are seeing him as if he were absent from the kingdom or separated from it, thus making the kingdom itself obscure to both of you. Sickness and separation are not of God, but the kingdom is. If you obscure the kingdom, you are perceiving what is not of God.
And then Emily hit us with paragraph 2. And this goes straight to Tim.
To heal, then, is to correct perception in your brother and yourself by sharing the Holy Spirit with him. This places you both within the kingdom and restores its wholeness in your mind. This reflects creation because it unifies by increasing and integrates by extending. What you project or extend is real for you. This is an immutable law of the mind in this world as well as in the kingdom. However, the content is different in this world because the thoughts it governs are very different from the thoughts in the kingdom. Laws must be adapted to circumstances if they are to maintain order. The outstanding characteristics of the laws of mind as they operate in this world is that by obeying them, and I assure you that you must obey them, you can arrive at diametrically opposed results. This is because the laws have been adapted to the circumstances of this world in which diametrically opposed outcomes seem possible because you can respond to two conflicting voices.
Yeah, I totally don't get this. It's like,
yeah, thank you.
Another language.
Yeah. He's pointing out that he's meeting you where you are in the world, believing in the body, time, and space. Believing that, for example, if you raise your voice, you're more powerful. And you can help somebody see the truth by raising your voice. It's kind of innocent, right? This is one of the laws of the world. Might makes right. Force can make things happen. And the ego will very quickly get your blood pressure up and make you look bigger, stronger, more angry, more forceful in order for you to get your way in arguments. The ego will do that. Love does not do that. Do you ever notice that? In the holy relationship, you don't try to get big. You try to get equal or small even. You seek to understand rather than make understand. So that's the difference here. This whole paragraph is talking about when you, because you are already drunk on the world, you do think like the world. It's your first choice. It's already happening. He says, and the ways of the world will block the ways of love, block the ways of the Holy Spirit. It says, you must think of the world when you're in the world. Therefore, you must make a choice not to follow the ego, not to follow the ways of the world, if you are to have miracles, if you are to reach the Holy Spirit. If you are to think thoughts that God, that you can think with God. It will be different. It will require a miracle. Naturally. Naturally. It doesn't happen automatically. The ego happens automatically. Because this is a land of the ego. This is a land of guilt, the land of struggle, the land of loss. That's where we are. That's what we're waking up from. Good, good. Thank you, Mark. Is that clear up at all?
Yeah.
Good, good. Sundari, tell us something about what it's like to choose the Holy Spirit instead of the ego.
I find that the stamp of the Holy Spirit on solutions arising in my life is that I never could have imagined the solution myself, and it completely solves the problem.
Nice.
And what I find when I spend the entirety of my morning meditation now, every instant of it, just downloading the operating system. Download, you know, solely your thoughts, solely your vision, solely your esophagus, solely your liver, solely your knees, you know, whatever. But I actually literally install Holy Spirit in what I found is that, and it's become an intention or affirmation, all aspects of my life solve themselves with kindness and grace, and I need do nothing. And tonight I learned something, a shift of perception. There's a way that I first aligned with Holy Spirit, you know, with a ferocity, with the kind of ferocity of, I want this as much as I want air, and I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, give up everything. And I write about it in my book, and I used on the way back from Egypt, actually, I was alone in England, and I said, Hineni, 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 which is a Hebrew word and means I am here, I am ready. And I said, whatever you need to do to maximize my service to the planet, do it. And I said, if you never want me to see my husband again and my children again and everything I own again, I'll take this suitcase, go wherever you want, whenever you want. And it's only tonight when you went to lesson 160, mm-hmm. I realized I had this dramatic inner template of thinking that in order to completely align with Holy Spirit, I had to sacrifice something. And so I put that out into the world, and it came back to me. I mean, within a year, my husband died in 6 hours. My daughter was hospitalized 81 days. You know, it was really intense. But I ended up in the end aligned with Holy Spirit really quite completely. But it's really only tonight that I kind of realized how, you know, heck, I could have saved a lot of trouble to do this without the drama, without putting out all those templates. And to me, it seems there's only three things you have to do. One, ask the Holy Spirit to be willing to hear what the Holy Spirit gives you. And three, to own what you receive.
Yep.
And it's simple. It's like, you know, so my journey was kind of hard and dramatic and really unnecessary. But it got me to a place where I truly feel, I just went through this 7 months of house repair.
Sundari?
Yeah.
You said it was unnecessary.
It was.
No, I don't think you can prove that.
Oh, you think it wasn't unnecessary, huh?
It was exactly the steps that worked for you. It was exactly necessary, and it wasn't too much.
Mm.
If it was not enough, you'd still be swimming in doubt. It was necessary, and it was cooked up just for you. Thank you very much. You need not question it. Ross?
I was just wanting to add to what Sundari said and say that I remember from the Course it's saying that since the Holy Spirit's outside of time and space, he knows the solution for the entire sonship.
Yeah.
So that's why you trust him rather than, you know, your ego, because you can only see your little world, your little piece of the world that you've blocked off with a fence of darkness from everybody else. You can barely see through that dark fence. But if you ask him, he's outside of time and space looking at the whole picture from the edge of time.
Thanks, Ross.
Yeah.
Say one thing to that. There's only one English word that I can think of that encompasses that, and it's benevolence. And it seems to me the only word I know that embraces all the sonship, the entirety, it includes everything. And I agree with you completely. It's only Holy Spirit that can bestow the benevolence on a situation, since we're incapable of holding everyone. But I love thinking about that word, because for me, it's the only word I can think of that applies automatically to the entirety of the sonship.
Thanks, Sundari.
And I have a question, though. Sundari, what if you could do it all over again, would you do it differently?
No.
Good answer.
No. To tell you the truth, no. I really felt the inevitability, you know, the script is written of the whole flow. And
yes.
There's parts of the jigsaw puzzle that we are together fits together into an entirety, even with all the edges. And I was given great gifts at each point of the situation.
Good. This is free. This is free.
Isn't it true that what I heard Andrew saying, and I hope I got this right, is your path is your path. And you needed that whole path to get where you are. Other people might need a different, more complicated or less complicated path.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You are caretaking the one who needed that very path. And you did great. And to Ross's point, let's have Tim. Would you read for us on page 28 in the manual for teachers? Page 28 in the manual for teachers. Back of the book, it's number 10, Miley, in the manual for teachers. And it's,
thank you.
How is judgment relinquished? Another really fun one we'll do one night is drill down on judgment. But Ross mentioned this, reminded me of this paragraph. Kind of fits for Sundari. Tim, when you get there, read for us paragraph 4.
Remember how many times you thought you knew all the facts you needed for judgment and how wrong you were. Is there anyone who has not had this experience? Would you know how many times you nearly thought you were right without ever realizing you were wrong?
So personal.
Why would you choose such an arbitrary basis for decision making? Wisdom is not judgment. It's the relinquishment of judgment. Make then but one more judgment. It is this. There is someone with a capital S whose judgment is perfect. He does know all the facts, past, present, and to come. He does know all the effects of his judgment on everyone and everything involved in any way. And he is wholly fair to everyone, for there is no distortion in his perception.
Beautiful, thank you. Right in your face with that one, isn't it? Okay, let's go to page 70. Do we have time? Yeah. Let's go to page 70 in the Manual for Teachers, which is number 29, Miley. Just go to the, keep going to number 29. As for the rest, what would Jesus say after answering a whole bunch of questions and answers and terms in A Course in Miracles and some of the big philosophical questions that Helen was getting hit with after she scribed the thing and started taking some ownership of it, and then there were things she didn't feel comfortable answering, and she asked, and Jesus came up with the Manual for Teachers for her. But there's some nice nuggets in here for us with our study tonight. So, Emily Sundari, would you start reading for us?
As for the rest, this manual is not intended to answer all questions that both teacher and pupil may raise. In fact, it covers only a few of the more obvious ones in terms of a brief summary of some of the major concepts in the text and workbook. It is not a substitute for either, but merely a supplement. While it is called a manual for teachers, it must be remembered that only time divides teacher and pupil, so that the difference is temporary by definition. In some cases, it may be helpful for the pupil to read the manual first. Others might do better to begin with the workbook. Still others may need to start at the more abstract level of the text.
And Mark, would you read for us paragraph 2?
Which is for which? Who would profit more from prayers alone? Who needs but a smile, being as yet unready for more? No one should attempt to answer these questions alone.
And there's much to say that there is a different path for everybody, which we brought up just a moment ago. You really can't compare paths because you're not that person. You're you with your unique circumstances, and your gifts are forthcoming by you taking your steps. Please continue.
Surely no teacher of God has come this far without realizing that. The curriculum is highly individualized, and all aspects are under the Holy Spirit's particular care and guidance. Ask, and he will answer. The responsibility is his, and he alone is fit to assume it. To do so is his function. To refer the questions to him is yours. Would you want to be responsible for decisions about which you understand so little? Be glad you have a teacher who cannot make a mistake. His answers are always right. Would you say that of yours?
Oh, that's pretty personal. You talking to me? Julie, would you read for us paragraph 3?
Excuse me. There is another advantage, and a very important one, in referring decisions to the Holy Spirit with increasing frequency. Perhaps you have not thought of this aspect, but its centrality is obvious. To follow the Holy Spirit's guidance is to let yourself be absolved of guilt. It is the essence of the atonement. It is the core of the curriculum. The imagined usurping of functions not your own is the basis of fear. The whole world you see reflects the illusion that you have done so, making fear inevitable. To return the function to the one whom it belongs is thus the escape from fear, and it is this that lets the memory of love return to you. Do not then think that following the Holy Spirit's guidance is necessary merely because of your own inadequacies. It is the way out of hell for you.
Other than that, you can ignore it. Whoa, you can't ignore that! It's the way out of hell for you! Isn't this beautiful what she just read? And isn't it wonderful also that everybody already taught the lesson that we're learning here with our testimonies? Everybody's testimonies already taught this most important lesson that Julie has just shared with us. It's the core of the curriculum, it says in the middle of that paragraph. The imagined usurping of functions that are not your own is the basis of fear. You're taking functions that are not yours, and you're trying to control your world. Then you should be afraid because you're not qualified. And when you're not qualified, you do everything right to get those people to move. You're just not. Give it up.
Andrew, the word imagined there I didn't catch it on first read, but that's a
good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
for me, letting the Holy Spirit answer my problems is a way of being free. Because then I don't have to worry about what I'm doing, what I'm saying, how I'm acting, because it's being guided by something within me that isn't this body.
It's an upgrade. As long as you're not using fear, it's an upgrade. What do you got, Sundari?
Well, it's really interesting to me that I used to have a lot of different practices, doing a lot of different things, and it's become one practice. And the only thing that seems to matter is handing it over to the Holy Spirit. I mean, it's like, it feels like that is the totality of my path now. My mirror exercises are that. My sitting meditation is that. My breathing is that. My walking is. It seems like it's become 100% of my practice. And the most satisfying.
And it always was. Your ego is trying to give all sorts of different pointers to what you were doing, but all of your practices, all of your efforts through all of the years has been leading you to the surrender of the separate ego, the separate life. What do you got, Emily?
I was just noticing that this imagined usurping of functions, not your own, is the basis of the fear. It's also freeing me from judging like parents who may not have done a good job of giving me all the information that, you know, made me work out things the way I did, which is my imagination also.
Yes, it would be a great place to put some guilt so that you're off the hook if you could blame your parents. Everybody else got better parents than you, at least the people who are successful, and that's the reason why they're so happy and you're not, is because the parents are to blame. Ay, ay, ay. If that becomes true, you're never going to be free, because for most of us, our parents are dying off, and they're not going to come in and fix us. The ego would love that. If you were stuck with some lack of training in your past, some sensitivity or awareness in your past you were blocked from because your parents didn't give it to you. Well, the Course beautifully says that even if that was true, it would be a problem to deal with right now by you, not them. Mm-hmm. So your awakening and your freedom is still one thought away in any circumstance. You bet. Good. What do you got, Ross?
I'm looking in this for the part where it says that by following the Holy Spirit, you save time. In other words, you know, I'm thinking about my story and how, you know, traumatic and dramatic it was, and going, wait a minute, I know there's something in here about if you follow the Holy Spirit, it's going to collapse time for us, but we haven't got to that yet.
Yeah.
I want to read that tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's in one of the miracle principles. There's also lesson 158, but if you just want to see it really quick in one sentence, hold your finger here, we'll be right back. And look at Miracle Principle 13, if you want to bend your mind around that.
I just want to read it tonight, because all this Holy Spirit stuff, it's like, why are we able? Because we want to save time. We don't want to go through this trauma anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Miracle Principle 13. It says, miracles are both beginnings and endings. And so they alter the temporal order. They're always affirmations of rebirth, which seems to go back, but really go forward. Are we playing with time yet? They undo the past in the present and thus release the future. Completely breaking the mystery of time and the addiction that if you do something now, you can have a better future. Or because something went wrong yesterday, tomorrow is not going to work out. All those are, that's sickness of time. That's time trance of sickness. You need a miracle. And you just become present and awake now. And you're free. Yeah, collapses time, just like that. Good, good. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll do a time night sometime. That'll be fun, too. Okay, turn back to page 70 in the Manual for Teachers, and let's look at that paragraph that Julie just read. And look how we've already answered. So many of us have talked around this beautiful, beautiful teaching. The core of the curriculum of A Course in Miracles. The whole world you see reflects the illusion that you have taken control. When you believe that everything you know is going to dictate your life, when I say you, I mean the one in the mirror that waves back, that you. When you believe that you're mature enough to handle your life and make everything go well, fear is inevitable because you are a substitute for you. You are just a shadow. You should be afraid if this is up to you. I love pointing out the sentence. Hold your finger here. Turn to page 298, paragraph 7, sentence 1. Where Jesus is saying, you know, actually, the sooner you let go of the steering wheel, the better. And here's why. On 298, which is chapter 14, section 11, sentence 7, he says, look, as hard as you might try, and as well as your heart might be in the right place, you cannot be your guide to miracles. This is great for Ross, who said, I need a guide. Damn it. You know what? I really do need help, he says. You cannot be your guide to miracles because it's you who made them necessary. Hey, we found the problem, and it's you! That's personal. That's personal. But it's also freedom. Because, you know, that's the whole thing, is that you're not actually what you think you are. Yeah. Good, good. Okay, back to page 70 in that paragraph that Julie just read. The whole world you see reflects the illusion that you have usurped all the functions and that you are responsible for making the world and you work. Wow. To return the function, really the function of life and living, to return the function to capital letters, to whom it belongs, is thus the escape from fear. This appeal to the beyond, this asking the Holy Spirit, as we said, I forget who said it, Luann somebody, says, you know what, I don't know what the answer is going to be. And I'm kind of grateful that I have enough courage now to ask and not know. And as Ross was understanding, is that it's something you surrender to, not compare and do by trial. It really is a freedom to receive the answer from a perspective that sees more than you. And it may not be anything you were thinking of. If you actually go out to the orchard and give something away, give some great fruit and stuff to the people who you're having a problem with. An act of kindness to make a bridge. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe. Fear goes away, though, right? When you start walking the path of the Holy Spirit, as many people said, it feels better. The stress goes down. Yes. This is how you know you're answering the call. You're following the Holy Spirit. And it knows that you are healing because he's teaching you to heal by an act of kindness or an act of patience or an act of understanding which dissolves all sorts of problems. But these things take you stepping back from your ego. But they are healings. They are healing. Oh. Do not then think that following the Holy Spirit's guidance is necessary merely because of your own inadequacies. It's not only because you're not capable. It's because if you don't learn to ask the Holy Spirit, you're going to stay in this hell that you made, actually preferring it. You really need to have a holy instances. You need to have, all of us have, awakening moments as a contrast so you don't go back and follow the ego's way of guilt, worry, hatred, divisiveness, etc. This is the way out of hell for you. With any time left, we do. Okay. This is kind of fun. So now, where we get to, I think Julie read, Jason's asleep. Isadora, would you read for us paragraph 4?
You know, sweetie, I still have the CE edition.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Donna, would you read for us in the Manual for Teachers, number 29, page 70, bottom of the page, paragraph 4.
I'm awake.
Okay, paragraph 4. Here again is the paradox often referred to in the Course. To say of myself I can do nothing is to gain all power. And yet it is but a seeming paradox. As God created you, you have all power. The image you made of yourself has none. The Holy Spirit knows the truth about you. The image you made does not. Yet, despite its obvious and complete ignorance, this image assumes it knows all things because you have given that belief to it. Such is your teaching, and the teaching of the world that was made to uphold it. But the teacher who knows the truth has not forgotten it. His decisions bring benefit to all, being wholly devoid of attack, and therefore incapable of arousing guilt.
Oh, I like that little circle. devoid of attack. Breaking the attack means you break the guilt that follows. Really good lesson right there. And Donna, just to close the meeting, would you read for us the first sentence of paragraph 7? First couple sentences, first three.
Remember that you are his completion and his love.
Okay, there's your job description, and there's your identity given to you by A Course in Miracles in print. Please continue.
Remember your weakness is his strength. But do not read this hastily or wrongly. If his strength is in you, what you perceive as your weakness is but illusion.
Okay, we got to stop there because it starts to get deep into some metaphysics. But it sure should help you start to understand that even though you may feel weak, as you're backing away from being so angry at those people and trying to run the tractor and the rototiller over their business to get your way, even though you may feel like backing away from that is weak, this is where the strength comes in of the Holy Spirit that will unite and bring an equal understanding, a bridge between the two sides. And love will enter. Light will enter. It's your weakness, the small YOU, the ego you, your weakness that you can't follow up on what the ego's suggesting. That weakness is the Holy Spirit's strength in you. Thank you, everybody. Beautiful. Good job. You guys are amazing. Everybody taught. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. Good job.
Thank you, Andrew.
Everybody.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thank you, Andrew.